ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, a former chief of the Australian Defence Force, Mark Binskin, has been tasked with evaluating Israel's response to the airstrike that killed seven aid workers, including the Australian Zomi Frankum in Gaza last week. Air Chief Marshal Binskin will examine the Israeli investigation into the attack and also advise our government if further action or calls for explanation are warranted. The appointment's been hailed as an important step in holding Israel to account. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says Israel should share all information it has on the deadly incident, including classified video material.
We are confident that will be made available because it is in Israel's interests as well for there to be transparency around these incidents. They have shaken the world.
Opposition leader Peter Dutton branded the appointment of a special advisor on Israel's response a political move.
He's been given mission impossible by this Prime Minister because the Prime Minister's after a political outcome for what is obviously a lot of angst and difficulty within the left wing of his Labor caucus.
Well, joining us once again for Nightlife News Breakdown is Quentin Dempster, freelance journalist and former ABC presenter. Quentin, good evening to you and welcome back to Nightlife.
Hi, Phil.
Mission impossible, do you think, getting the real truth out of the Israeli military? Is this appointment a political move deemed necessary to help quell the outrage in the LP ranks, or do you think it might shed some actual light?
If you look at the way Albanese handles these things, there's some method to what is underway with the appointment of Binskin. He can do a timeline reconstruction. He can look at all the official sources. There's already the public sources of what's going on. I could only encourage listeners, I know this is radio and it's great, but Sarah Ferguson had a good interview with Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner on 7:30. And if people missed it, they can catch up on iView, where she interrogated. He's from the IDF, the Israeli Defence Force. And although they said that, you know, two people had been disciplined or dismissed, under interrogation from Sarah, he said one had been relieved of his duties at colonel rank, and another, a major, was a reservist, was now out of the IDF. And the whole investigation was being overseen by the military advocate general. And he assured Sarah that all the detail would be passed on to Binskin, was very well aware of the sensitivity of this matter and the outrage worldwide. So it's not mission impossible. I feel confident that Binskin would put his hand up if he gets any obstruction. And anybody doing a decent job of investigation would say, listen, I haven't got access to this, why not? And we report back to the federal government, the Australian federal government, what was going on. So if there's any obstruction. So look, there's domestic politics in this, but more importantly, there's this issue of whether it was, if it was calculated. The Israelis have said it was a grave error and it was a mistake. There's all sorts of other information that Luna put out about this evening about misidentification or some concern about somebody having a gun or could be Hamas or whatever. But what it was, the apparent targeting of three vehicles and the deaths of these aid workers from World Kitchen was just seemed to everybody to be calculated. So Sarah made the point in reading out to the Lieutenant Colonel what constitutes a war crime if it is a calculated murder rather than, as the Israelis currently say, a grave error, which happens in war.
Well, that's right. I mean, the Israelis are running hard on the fog of war argument, aren't they? Saying, you know, these bad things happen in wars, the whole thing's terrible and this is a terrible thing. And, yeah, okay, we accept responsibility for the terrible event. But as you mentioned, it doesn't seem anything other than that two or possibly three Israeli officers have been slightly sanctioned or demoted. It's not clear whether they're still part of the IDF or not. Is Mark Binskin actually ever going to really get much further with this? Look, you have to sympathise with him. I mean, he's up against the IDF, the Israeli Defence Force. And, you know, his ability to probe will be limited by what the IDF want to tell him, isn't it?
That's true, but there are other sources available, and there are a lot of people from who are eyewitnesses. There's a difference between eyewitness and hearsay, direct evidence. He can reconstruct a timeline that's probably already been done by investigations by the IDF. These were drone operators operating on laptops, on computer screens, and the rules of engagement, as Sarah had pointed out in that interview, designated that you must be pinpoint sure of the identity of the enemy, so that there is no collateral death of innocence. And the Lieutenant Colonel Lerner tried to address that issue by saying there were extenuating circumstances, but still a grave error was made. The whole thing is grotesque in this sense, because the Israelis have been using bunker busters, and what they say is the collateral damage where in war innocents are killed. And that's been the whole basis of the International Court of Justice and the International Criminal Court going into when other countries have complained about this. Jeff Kennett, I wanted to make the point, Jeff Kennett, he'd just been tweeting that Australia didn't make any much of a song and dance about the Australian citizen who had been killed by Hamas in the October 7 attack, and seemed to be implying why there's this degree of outrage. I think the context is there's this degree of outrage because it identifies somebody close to Australia who has lost her life in this at a time of a huge lethality of the IDF response, and the question about the IDF's misjudgment in the overreach from the Hamas atrocities on October 7. And that's what's distressing, is that it is the humanitarian catastrophe that comes from this is distressing to everybody around the world.
Exactly. To the release today of the interim review of Australia's Food and Grocery Code of Conduct, the former Labor Minister and economist Craig Emerson conducted a review of the Grocer's Code of Conduct, which has suggested fines of up to 10% of annual revenue for supermarket corporations which mistreat suppliers. Treasurer Jim Chalmers says the government wants to pursue a proposed multi-million dollar penalty regime for the supermarket sector if grocers like Coles and Woolworths engage in anti-competitive behaviour.
We want to strengthen the code. An important part of that is making it mandatory, imposing penalties, making sure that we get the dispute resolution right. All of those key features of those eight recommendations from Craig are something we are interested in progressing, subject to a few weeks of genuine consultation.
Quentin, the Big Four supermarkets signed on to the voluntary code in 2015. But Craig Emerson found a heavy imbalance in market power. Is there a big enough stick here, do you think?
A big enough fix? Do you think it'll fix it? Or
a big enough stick, in other words.
Stick. I know the cynicism that comes with this. Mandatory means enforceable. But the thing about this is these big supermarket chains have got lawyers. And Alan Fells, when he was with the ACCC years ago in an interview, said, Quentin, it's very hard. You've got to be careful when you are about to apply the stick, and that is the prosecution, which would result in fines, because then it comes down to the evidence. And the ACCC doesn't have coercive powers. It can't tap your phone. It can take complaints from poor consumers who've been gouged and raise the
issues. And suppliers, yeah, that's right.
And poor old farmers who said, I've been exploited. By the way, you'll note that Emerson's been supported by the National Farmers Federation, the Farmers Union. They're very happy about what's happened. The fact that the Big Four have signed up to accepted mandatory indicates they're prepared to take a bit of stick, if that's what you could call it, for this, and try to change their behaviour. But the key to it, Phil, is in the prosecution, whether it's under existing law or it gives the government a greater stick if there is mandatory, if there is a mandatory code. Yeah. So then you can determine breaches one by one.
There is another issue, and that is whether the supermarket businesses and the big supermarket duopoly, the Coldsworth one, should be broken up. The Treasurer says no.
That's not something that we have been exploring, because we have found better, more effective ways to deal with some of the issues in our competition policy landscape.
Green Senator. The Greens, of course, say, well, without powers to force Coles and Woolies to break up and sell off parts of their businesses they've introduced, it's, well, according to Green Senator Nick McKim, it's like applying a Band-Aid to a gaping wound, and he's pretty cynical.
This is Labor lining up with the giant supermarket corporations and putting their billions of dollars of annual profits ahead of the millions of Australians who can't afford to put food on the table.
Quentin, should divestiture be an option? I mean, should the government move to try and break up the big supermarket duopoly in Coles and Woolworths?
If it came down to it, yes, they could. McKim's right, I suppose, to put the boot in to what he thinks is a political fix at a time of a cost of living crisis. But again, it comes down to the law and competition policy and strengthening the powers of the ACCC to go in and to get a few prosecutions on the board. Once they get prosecutions and they have to pay fines, that changes corporate culture and behaviour and is better for consumer protection. But that mate takes years, and it has to be done because they will go to the lawyers. If you're being prosecuted, you take up a defensive position. Same with breaking up the so-called duopolies. They have made substantial profits. There's a strong view that they have used inflation on the RBA's counter-inflation measures as a cover for gouging. And a lot of consumers are very well aware of the tricks and the deceit and some of the deceptions in their pricing policies and in their marketing. The consumers are now very well aware of it, and the Big Four are very well aware that they're on the nose. So we can only hope that they see that they are on a public relation downer and they change their behaviours. They still want to make a profit, of course. They want to maintain solvency. They employ a lot of people. So you've got to keep all that in perspective as well to try to get them to change their behaviours, particularly for the farmers who really do need a substantial return. A good return for all the food and services they provide for us.
Yes, indeed. Look, can we talk about lobbying? A Senate inquiry into lobbying began its public hearings today. The committee's due to report on the 30th of April. The TLMP and independent member for Kooyong, Monique Ryan, introduced a private members bill in November to enforce stronger rules and more transparency around lobbying. She says there'd been overwhelming support for the proposed measures. Senator David Pocock from the ACT Senator says who's also been leading calls for lobbying reform, said there's a legitimate role for lobbying, but it's important to have appropriate guardrails in place. He says the inquiry is to focus on transparency rules. Senator Pocock says the public needs to be aware of who has private access to MPs and senators.
And we now know that there are over 2,100 of these access all areas at any hours passes to Parliament House. We have no idea who they are. I think there needs to be more transparency.
He went on.
And then when it comes to our actual lobbyist register, it's pretty loose. Like, it is very loose. There's barely an enforcement mechanism. And I'd argue that if lobbyists who have access to the building do the wrong thing, there should be clear process and punishment for that.
Quentin, you've for many years reported and observed on politics. I mean, lobbying has always been a concern. There's always been a view if you've got money, you can get access to politicians directly. In fact, in some cases, you can pay to get access by buying spots at dinners and so on by way of donations, can't you?
I think that's a bigger issue. Is the slush funding and the fact that they can pay big amounts of money to individual politicians and to the major parties, and it's not transparent and it's not immediate. The other thing that the Centre for Public Integrity has been going on about appropriately is the publication of ministerial diaries. So I think, Phil, if we had that in real time, who they were seeing, which lobbyists they were seeing, and an explanation of what the meeting was about, the public would see where the access went. If you were a minister, you'd say, "Look, I want to serve the public interest. I'm an honourable person, and of course, people can see the diary of who I am seeing and allowing access to. And I can stand up in Parliament and say, yes, I saw the mining industry, or I saw the ABC lobby, or I saw the what have you, and we had an exchange of views. The bigger issue is the slush funding, the amounts of money that go to the major political parties and now all the political parties, and it's a very high benchmark, and big money can buy the policy outcomes that you want. It's worse in the United States than it is in Australia, but still an issue in Australia, and it leads to mistrust. The public is cynical about access, and what Pocock and Monique Ryan and the Teals are doing, and they were elected on this basis on those six seats, was integrity. So this goes to integrity so that the public can trust the politicians, if ever that was possible.
It is. You think David Pocock's at a point here, Senator Pocock's at a point, when he says 2,144 people have unfettered all hours, all areas access to Parliament House. These are not ordinary citizens. No citizen's got this. But we don't know who they are, and unless you own up publicly to having one, you'll never know. I mean, this is not right, is it?
No, it's not right. It should be transparent. They're not necessarily bringing in brown paper bags with money in it.
Well, who would know?
Not that we would know.
Who would know?
We'd have to surveil the video, the CCTV footage, to find out. But I don't know if that's happening. In this sense, now we've got a National Anti-Corruption Commission, and they have a broad brief to look at systemic and serious corruption. They have yet to hold a public hearing. They started in July last year. There's quite a substantial staff there, and we're waiting to see when they do go public with their first inquiry. So people are getting onto the National Anti-Corruption Commission, people with reasonable or substantive evidence of wrongdoing or corruption, and they've got a whole series of investigations underway at the moment, but they have to prioritise it. So what the Senate inquiry is doing is helpful on the integrity argument, but also we've got another statutory body with coercive powers called the National Anti-Corruption Commission, like the New South Wales ICAC and all the other states who've got anti-corruption bodies. So at least we've got structures in place in Australia that where people can go to anonymously if necessary and say, hey, the minister's on the take, or the minister's doing something wrong, or I have reasonable suspicion that somebody's paying off this poly, or they've got unfair access.
Yeah. All right, Quentin, always good to talk. Thank you.
All the best, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.